Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Say his name!
George Floyd!
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 George Floyd! Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at The Times. Today's topic, covering protests. Joining us today is Josh Solomon, a reporter for The Times who normally covers city government in St. Petersburg. But these days, he's spending a lot of time out with police and protesters. Josh was kind enough to join us, even though he hasn't gotten a lot of sleep this week. Welcome, Josh.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Let's go back sort of to the beginning and talk a little bit. I mean, Josh, you were one of our first people out on the street covering these protests. What were you expecting when you went out there?
You know, that's a good question. You know, of course, we had seen a lot of the destruction and some of the violence by both protesters and the police happening in cities all over the country. But our first day of protesting here in the Tampa Bay area was Saturday, and I mean, there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of emotion. There was a fair amount of tension, but it was a good day. Nothing bad happened. The police presence was relatively light. The protesters were relatively disciplined. I think they were expressing, all the pain that they came to the police station with that day. And then by about midnight, the protest ended, and it was, I think city officials were very proud of the performance of their police department. They were very proud of the performance of the city. And it seemed like, you know, maybe St. Petersburg was going to avoid a lot of the sort of explosive tension that was playing out in other cities, including in Tampa that night. That didn't turn out to be totally the case. Although, relatively speaking, the protests and demonstrations in St. Pete have remained mostly subdued.
Right. We've had some problems in Tampa, especially that first weekend. But there was looting and some fires set. But since then, even in Tampa, things have been relatively peaceful, I'd say.
They have been. It's funny, the situations in Tampa and St. Pete are so different. In Tampa, there were, especially last week, demonstrations all over the city. And I think it made it more difficult for law enforcement to sort of monitor them and control them. But also it sort of felt like reading, the coverage of colleagues that the protesters in Tampa were more disparate. Whereas in St. Pete, it's been mostly one group and gathering, and their organization over the last week or so has evolved to an impressive degree. And I think that's, been one of the key differences because the focal point early on in St. Pete was the police station. And now there's this big march that happens twice daily at a certain time, and it involves hundreds of people. That's been one of the major differences, I think, has been the very focused nature of the St. Pete demonstrations against relatively unfocused demonstrations over in Tampa.
Yeah. Josh, when you were going out initially, did you feel fearful or apprehensive? And Lane went out last week, too, for the first time. Lane can weigh in, too. But how are you guys feeling as you're heading out there?
I didn't really feel apprehensive at all. I think that when I went into it, the thing that I was most fearful of, frankly, was being taken into custody by the police. Because we had seen, we had just seen Omar Jimenez of CNN taken into custody live on TV. you know, I had seen all this Twitter traffic about journalists being shot at by pepper balls or rubber bullets. And so I went in, my primary goal when I went in was, you know, trying to make sure that I wasn't going to get caught up in police crowd dispersion tactics, that I wasn't going to get rounded up or cuffed or detained. I was not fearful of, you know, walking around the protesters and being mixed in with the crowd and identifying myself as a journalist. So what I did initially on Saturday and then on subsequent days was I wore a Times branded t-shirt. I wore my press badge out around my neck, which is something I don't usually do. And I made sure that the very first thing that I did was identify myself to some of the commanding officers who I know, who I've interviewed, who I've written about, who know my name. And I just said, you know, basically that I'm here, this is what I'm wearing. If I'm in your way, please let me know. You know, of course, I'm going to follow any orders given by law enforcement. I'm not trying to, you know, become a problem or distraction for anybody. And it's funny, they all kind of just blew me off. Like, of course, you know, we know who you are. We're not worried about you. And so that made me feel a little bit better. Then on the first night that things got kind of tense on Sunday night, when there was the first explosive clear out of the interstate of the intersection in front of the police station. You know, as all the protesters were being cleared out and, you know, I was sort of over in a corner with a colleague. There was a Pinellas County Sheriff's deputy who didn't know me. I didn't know him. And, you know, he started barking at us in a very aggressive nature. And it sort of made me realize in the moment that all of the work I'd put in to try to avoid a situation where you know, I'm being caught up in the middle, it really didn't matter once the clear out started. I don't know every single officer in Pinellas County. Every single officer doesn't know me. Of course, I know the command staff, but it didn't go terribly far. And then we ended up seeing that play out two nights later when our colleague Jay Cridlin was in St. Petersburg, was taken into custody in St. Pete, and then Divi Kumar was taken into custody over in Tampa. That's what I was most fearful of. Again, I wasn't fearful at all of being mixed in with the crowd and identifying myself as a reporter among protesters.
Lane, you want to jump in? What was your thought going out?
I feel like a wimp going after Josh, because I kind of was fearful. I think I was fearful of tear gas and of rubber bullets and of things that the cops were dispersing into the crowd more than I was fearful of being arrested. But it turned out I was worried about all the wrong things. Because, I mean, being part of the crowd was really interesting because we were trying to stay to the edge and not mix with the crowd, but also, of course, we're not with the police. So it was interesting to try to find your spot there. The people in the crowd kept saying, join us, you know, and I had my Times t-shirt on too and was like, no, we're with the media. And that didn't elicit negative responses, but some people were like, oh, walk away from us. You know what I mean? They wanted to like get their distance from us. But I think the other surprising part was that three different people stopped me and my colleague Emily and thanked us for being there. I've been a reporter for 30 years covering everything from mass shootings to hurricanes. I've never ever had anybody thank me for being there. It was a young, probably your age, Josh, like a young, you know, mid-20s white guy the first time, and then a guy with dreads the second time. And it was like, it was so surprising that they were grateful that we were there, you know. But I wasn't worried about covering news because I've done that my whole life, but I should have been, because I wish I'd been with you too, Josh, because you've guided me through these technological things before. But it was really, really, really hard for me to keep up with the crowd that was marching really, really fast and to try to tweet and text and send photos and keep the photographer and the other reporter in my eyes and watch my back to see what was happening when these pickup trucks were speeding by, especially after it got dark. So I found the reporting and the filing the thing that I should have been worried about more than the crowd and the rubber bullets.
I will say, so here at the Times, we have been building a a kind of a tip sheet from the get-go, and we've just been adding to it and modifying it based on what the reporters and photographers are seeing out there, and we've been trying to figure out best practices. Obviously, we've all covered protests to some degree before, but something that's been this ongoing and this extreme, and of course we have Tampa and St. Pete that we're covering, and occasionally other cities and counties where things are breaking out. So the tip sheet, if you're not doing that in your own newsroom, you probably should, because it's been very helpful to get feedback from people and then try to adapt that. And one of the big conversations we had, and these guys have both mentioned it, is whether to identify ourselves more directly as the media, and particularly, you know, the Tampa Bay Times. You know, we had a lot of conversation about that. Do we put ourselves in more jeopardy by kind of having a billboard say, you know, you work with the media these days? On the other hand, I think the experience that you both have had is that we are a regional newsroom. I think that a lot of the people who read us and follow us know that, and they feel appreciative of the work we do. So there's not the animus that there may be in other places around the country, especially with national media. But that's even evolving our thinking on that has been really interesting, to sort of say to people, yes, you know, make sure that you very clearly signal who you are. So I assume that you guys didn't feel like that put you in more jeopardy. That seemed like it has been a good thing.
To me, I thought that was one of the biggest safety measures I could take, was being clear and upfront about who I am. And then when the officers in those clear outs where they would throw these flashbang grenades three nights or four nights in a row, and the officers would pour out of the police station in riot gear, and there'd be deputies who would come back them up in dozens of patrol cars, and it got kind of chaotic. The only thing that kept us from, you know, being detained was yelling and screaming at the top of our lungs that we were reporters. We were reporters. And Maria, I think you're exactly right. You know, we come from a local newsroom. And so even if a particular officer or deputy doesn't know me, the reporter who happens to be standing there, you know, they know the brand. They know the Tampa Bay Times. They know that we're local. And so I thought that afforded me an extra level of protection. This was not, say, you know, St. Petersburg didn't have the National Guard, and I didn't work for, you know, some foreign news outlet. When I say foreign, it could be foreign or just not from the Tampa Bay area. You know, I didn't parachute into the community, and we weren't working with law enforcement officers who also parachuted into the community. And so I do think that sort of amid the chaos, if we could get across that we were local professionals here to do a job, much the same that, you know, just like they were, it bought us a lot of goodwill. And sort of as soon as the temperature, you know, dropped, within a minute or two of the clear out, we were given free rein to roam the intersection. The TV reporters were allowed to do their live shots right in front of the police station, which, you know, not 2 minutes ago had been occupied by protesters. You know, I was allowed to walk wherever I wanted. I got access to the chief, you know, which of course was valuable in terms of our storytelling. And so it was, I really do think that identifying ourselves as reporters and being from the city where this was taking place, being from a known entity, was the most valuable thing. And I wouldn't have, you know, if given a chance to do it again, I certainly would not have been more discreet about who I was. If anything, I would have been louder about who I was.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think it also helped, Josh, that we knew the city. I mean, I think even if I'd been sent to Tampa, I would have had a harder time. But the crowds, you know, I know the city intimately. I've been here for 20 years, and the crowds kept turning corners. And you know, if I didn't know the city and where we were going, it would have been a lot more disconcerting to try to get ahead of them or catch up with them, you know, and know that the tenor of, oh, this is this neighborhood they're going in now. This is a really different place to take this, you know. So just in terms of like, yes, local reporting, I think it made a difference in terms of how we could cover it too, just being from here.
Absolutely. And the really nice thing was that the St. Pete protesters, you know, they were predictable. They would walk the same routes every day at the same time. And so it made it really easy both to sort of monitor the crowd, to swap reporters in and out. Where are you? Where was the crowd 30 minutes ago? Where might they be heading? And yes, absolutely. The fact that this was happening in St. Pete, Lane, a city that we both cover, where, you know, the streets, by the way, are numbered. It's a perfect grid, which makes it really easy to sort of navigate as well. I think helped immensely.
I was going to ask you guys, what are some of the moments that stayed with you? Obviously you're covering something really unprecedented in our careers. I'm wondering, you know, months and months from now, when you're looking back, what's going to stick with you? What are some of the things that really stand out?
Lane, do you want to go first?
I joined Thursday's protest right as it was getting started in a very nice upscale neighborhood of St. Petersburg. And all these people were pulling up in their cars to kind of figure out what was going on. They blocked traffic at a major intersection right about 5 o'clock. So lots of people, you know, trying to come through there anyway. And there was a grandmom, maybe a great grandmom, I don't know, an elderly black woman who brought her three little grandkids. And she was trying to figure out, they were little, they were like 3, 5, and 6 maybe. And they were trying to figure out how to join the protest, if they should join the protest. She didn't think she could walk with everybody. And she ended up getting in her car, it kind of in the back of the group of people. And she followed for like 5 hours. I mean, I was out there for 5 hours. And this grandma, she would hand her little grandkids, you know, apple juice in the back seat and stuff. But it was just, it struck me how much she wanted to be part of that and to show these little kids a piece of this, you know, and even if it meant driving instead of walking, she was going to be there. And that, I think that'll stick out with me.
There were a couple moments. Actually, one of the moments that I think will stick with me the most was the very first day. So Saturday, I believe it was May 30th or May 31st. Maybe 200 or 300 people had gathered in front of City Hall to do sort of a rally, and then they marched themselves over to the police department, maybe 8 blocks away. And what I found particularly noteworthy was that there was not one single uniformed police officer in sight. And this crowd of 200 or 300 people marched themselves along a major thoroughfare in the city over to the police station. And they did so, I mean, it was almost remarkable how the crowd sort of moved like one organism, and they didn't really need or ask for any level of guidance or protection or help, assistance from the police department. I thought that was, maybe I didn't really know what to expect, but I thought that was a moment that kind of stuck with me. Like, it just felt very purpose-driven, the whole crowd as one. That was on Saturday. That was the first day when the protests were almost felt very productive, for lack of a better word. And it didn't end that night in explosions. Another moment I think that will stick with me for a long time is the next night when police decided to clear the intersection after midnight in front of the police station using the explosives for the first time. And I know that, you know, compared to what may have happened in Atlanta or compared to what may have happened in, it would be happening in Minneapolis or Washington, D.C. or New York City, you know, the tactics that the police station used, I mean, were probably measured by comparison, but that was a really scary moment. It was really weird to be so close to these explosions. And I mean, I was fearful for my safety. And I think it gave me sort of a sense of what, you know, the protesters fear when they go out and what may, you know, what they may be exposed to. But that was wild. It felt, calling it like a war zone feels kind of like a cliche, but for 30 seconds, there were explosions in the street of St. Pete. I never anticipated that. And that was wild. That will stick with me for a long time.
Can you guys talk about what's been the best advice you've gotten during this period or that you've given? I mean, now that we've been doing this for several days, what do you think, I'm looking for advice that you can share with other journalists around the country.
I did a story for Sunday that was really well received and got a lot of mail on both sides, but I think anybody could do this one. I went out. I was sort of getting frustrated by everybody just saying like, oh, I want justice. I want my voice to be heard. And I kept thinking like, as a journalist, right? Like, what's the third level of follow-up questions? Like, what does that look like? What does that mean? And I'm really curious to hear from you too, Josh. Like, I have zero idea of what it's going to take to end these protests. I can't imagine what would satisfy these people. There's nothing concrete that I can see that would be done. Everybody has such different things they want from this and such, I mean, a lot of the same reasons for being there, but different goals and objectives. So I think, you know, if you guys go out there and you're covering protests in your own cities, ask the people, like, what specific things law enforcement or the leadership can do. I mean, part of our job as journalists is to further this conversation. And I don't see a lot of that happening on the streets. You know, I see a lot of enthusiasm. I see a lot of passion. But I don't see a lot of, like, here's what it's going to take for us to stop coming out every night, you know? And so I think that would be a good conversation to start in your own communities.
I think with regard to like actually physically doing the coverage, my biggest advice might be that the adrenaline rush can only take you so far. I feel like I was operating off of adrenaline 3 days in a row. And then after that, I definitely needed a break. Last week was a long week, and you know, if there's a way, if you're a reporter covering the protests, or if you're a newsroom leader, you know, leading protest coverage, get people in and out. I mean, these are, you know, 10, 12 mile days if the protesters in your city may be marching. You know, they're long, they're organized, they're angry, they're passionate. You know, a particular reporter may be angry and passionate as well, but they're there to do a job, and they have to come back and do the job again the next day and the next day and the next day. And so, you know, it's difficult because the work feels so mission driven. We're out there to cover, you know, civil, you know, unrest and, you know, monitor use of force and provide a voice to those who are so often unheard, and, you know, really, give an account, a historical account, you know, of what's happening in the cities that we cover. And so I understand the urge to work 15 hours and do every single thing. But I think by the end of last week, after, you know, I worked a week where I worked 5 days in a row, 15 hours, it became very difficult, to, you know, to keep up, to, continue to tell the story, you know, in the same level of enthusiasm. And so get some rest, you know, do all the things that reporters, that folks always tell people to do. But this is absolutely a marathon and not a sprint. And so it requires, you know, folks to recharge so they can come back at it, with the same level of enthusiasm the next day.
I want to give a shout out to Josh here too, just for a second, because Josh, I have no idea how many days in it was on Thursday when you came, but one of the hard things, like being a newspaper reporter for all these years, when you cover a tragedy, when you cover a hurricane, one of the things that does lift you up is being back with your colleagues, either in the newsroom or at a bar or somewhere to gather and sort of like decompress and be all in this together. And we haven't been able to do that. You know, coronavirus is sort of stolen our opportunity to lift each other up in person. And at the end of a very long march the other night, our feet were dying, we were thirsty and hungry. Josh, on his night off, came and picked us up like a knight in shining armor in his car, had water, had sandwiches, drove us back to where our cars were so we didn't have to walk another 7 miles. And it was just that kind of thing of like lifting up your colleagues and just being there. It was so important. And so I just wanted to say thanks, Josh. That was an amazing moment.
You're welcome.
I'm glad he said that about taking some time off, though, too, because he needs it as much as anybody. And it's true. everyone gets so caught up in these moments, and but this is a marathon without end. We don't know when it's going to end even. So I think that's really great advice about pacing yourself and trying to take care of yourself. And we hadn't even talked about COVID until just now, but that's been another complicating factor, of course, in the middle of all of this. All right. So if you have any questions for Lane or for Josh, or would like to suggest a podcast topic, please email it to writelane@tampabay.com. That's writelane@tampabay.com, or find us on our Facebook group. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Allison Graves. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.